Our next speaker is Hans Christensen, who is director of the Nuclear Information Project at the Federation of American Scientists. Many of us read Hans to get all the facts about nuclear weapons, who has them and what they're doing with them. His aim is to provide the public with analysis and background information about the status of nuclear forces and their roles in security doctrines. He's also co-author of the Nuclear Notebook column in the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists and the World Nuclear Forces Overview in the SIPRI Yearbook. And today he's going to be talking about the status and trends of the world's nuclear arsenals.
Thanks, Ray. And let me also start by thanking the organizers, and especially Helen, for all the work to get this underway and the opportunity to come up here. Thank you. So I'm sorry I have to, bore you with the technical stuff, you know, of what's out there. But it's an interesting follow-on to the previous briefing, of course, because it's, you know, it's good to think about what this is all about. You know, I'll be talking about the arsenals. I'll be talking about the trend. I'll be talking about, you know, what we see going on out there in terms of modernizations of the nuclear force levels. But in that, of course, you quite often forget the humanitarian aspect of it, and so it's important. Okay, so let me begin with a little status report here, and remind people about the good news, if you will, which is the enormous progress that has been made since the Cold War in terms of reducing the overall arsenals. I mean, you have to remember, those of you who lived and worked during the Cold War, that in those days, the reality was that literally the entire world lived, 30 minutes from annihilation every single day. It was frontline news, it was in your face all the time. It wasn't just something that could happen. Nuclear weapons were deployed everywhere, and they were rubbing up against each other, literally, on ships and aircraft loaded with them and what have you. And since then, we've had an enormous reduction in the number of nuclear weapons. And still, we have arsenals that are immensely more powerful, that even if you want or believe that nuclear weapons play an important role in national security, the arsenals that exist today are vastly in excess of even that. So we're still far away from, if you could say, bring us out of the Cold War mindset in terms of the arsenals. And what I want to illustrate with this one is not only how the total inventory has come down, but also about how U.S. and Russian arsenals have now, those weapons that are deployed on strategic delivery systems like missiles and long-range bombers that can, that are ready to go out and do what they're designed to do on very short notice, has come down significantly during compared to the 1980s. But again, as I said, still large inventories, and I'll get back to some of the details about them. But there's some trends here. We're down now to something in the order of about 10,000 nuclear weapons that are in the global stockpile, the military stockpiles, those weapons that are in the possession of the militaries of nine countries. And those are the weapons that are assigned to delivery vehicles that can actually fly out or sail out and what have you and do what they're supposed to do. But there are also large inventories of weapons that have been retired, and they're on their way out, but they're still intact, of course. And they're working away, and that's the top part of the lower bar. They're working away at eating out and dismantling those weapons every year. And so what's below that is sort of what you could call, the enduring stockpiles, those that the military now say are necessary. And what really is striking, I think, about the lower bar is how enormously more nuclear weapons the United States and Russia think they need for their security compared to any other country in the world. I mean, there's no other country in the world that says they need more than a couple of hundred nuclear weapons for their security. But the United States and Russia, they still have these out-of-proportion arsenals compared to the rest of the world. And so, of course, they have a special responsibility in reducing those forces. And it is still primarily, if you will, on their shoulders that the responsibility lies for getting these very, very, very large arsenals down to lower levels. But looking to the future, I mean, you all know the last couple of decades where we've had a lot of talk about end of the Cold War, the Obama administration coming in, last 8 years we've heard a lot of talk, at least in the first part of it, a lot of talk about you know, putting an end to Cold War thinking, dramatic reductions in nuclear weapons, reducing the role of nuclear weapons, and so on and so on. And now it's interesting to look at, so what? What is this? What has this led to? Well, we've come down compared to the Cold War significantly. But since the 2007, 8, 9 period, somewhere around there, we've not had significant reductions of nuclear weapons. And the trend is quite clearly that the pace of reductions, the pace is slowing down. What we see now is more that the nuclear weapon states are sort of gearing up for the long haul, if you will. They're sort of figuring out, what do we need indefinitely to be, you know, big nuclear powers? And so the trend is more sort of a leveling out, if you will, of the force level rather than a continuation of the reductions. And this comes, of course, with in the context that here in the United States, the debate has very much shifted from efforts to reduce the arsenals of nuclear weapons to efforts to modernize what's left. And so if you look at the Obama administration's agenda, what it's doing, what's planning to do, arms control has been almost entirely replaced by nuclear arms modernization. And over the next decade, the United States alone plans to spend something in the order of $350 billion on, you know, on maintaining and modernizing its nuclear forces. Russia, all the other nuclear weapon states are also modernizing. All the nuclear weapon states are busy modernizing their nuclear forces. I want to talk a little specifically about non-strategic nuclear weapons because of what's going on in the world right now, in Europe, with Ukraine, how Russia and NATO are getting into each other's face again. And what we're seeing there is that this category of weapons are being drawn into the conflict, even if not intentional, even if not intended. And the reason is that the non-strategic nuclear weapons, the shorter-range nuclear weapons, they are on so-called dual-capable forces. Those are aircraft, ground-launched missiles, what have you, that can launch both conventional weapons as well as nuclear. So when you have a crisis like Ukrainian crisis, where Russia is deploying forces both to Crimea, but also deploying aircraft into the Baltic Sea, down the Norwegian Sea, and into the North Sea, and into the Black Sea, and what have you, and NATO is responding by deploying its forces further east, sending aircraft to on a rotational basis into Poland and Romania, and what have you. Those are forces that can carry nuclear weapons as well. So even if they don't intend to say to the other side, we're now doing something with tactical nuclear weapons, the other side looks at it and says, these forces can carry nuclear weapons. And so it escalates the crisis and the message in a crisis unintentionally. And so we see that all the time in the news now. Right now. It's about, Russia is deploying nuclear weapons to Crimea. Well, there's been nuclear-capable forces in Crimea for, you know, decades. But some things are changing. And so it's feeding into the fear and the perception of how serious the crisis is. And the Russian tactical nuclear weapons, their forces that can deliver them are deployed all over the place. They're dual-capable forces. They serve non-nuclear missions as well. But we see some updates to those sites where they store them. The three smaller images down at the bottom are satellite photos from, you know, 3 years or 2 years, a period of 2 years. It's one of the Western bases, air bases, where they store or operate a medium-range bomber called a backfire bomber. And what you can see is a nuclear weapon storage site where the perimeter and some of the buildings inside during that period have been upgraded. The perimeter has been modernized, new fences put in and cleared out, and the facilities themselves inside are being upgraded. And so it's an active site. You know, nuclear weapon states look at each other, and they see these satellite photos. The picture to the right, that's an image from Kaliningrad, a similar thing where the perimeter around a nuclear weapon storage site, former nuclear weapon storage site, has been upgraded and cleared up, a signal. Again, not necessarily that there are nuclear weapons at that storage site, but that they have the capacity to bring them in if necessary. These things are used to signal back and forth all the time. In Europe, the United States stores about 180 nuclear bombs, gravity bombs, tactical nuclear weapons, at 6 bases in 5 countries. Those are the ones that are the red countries or markers on the map. The other markers indicate places where they can store them if they want to. There are facilities that can store them. And France, of course, also has some air-launched cruise missiles that they call strategic, but they are, you know, the same characteristics as Russian weapon types of that kind that are called tactical. So, you know, there are plenty of these forces, both in Western and Eastern Europe as well. So I wanted to draw attention specifically by talking to this, is this thing about how you signal with tactical nuclear weapons. These are some examples of the recent developments. The big picture you can see is a picture that's just from last year, shortly after the Russians invaded Ukraine and took Crimea. This is an air base where you can see a nuclear-capable air defense system that's moving in, literally like a couple of days after the invasion. It's set up, you know, on this particular base. You have nuclear-capable bombers that are, you know, on the base as well. On the top picture on the right, you have a picture of a German Air Force personnel loading an American nuclear B-61 nuclear weapon onto a German aircraft. And so Germany has signed the Non-Proliferation Treaty and pledged not to receive nuclear weapons directly or indirectly. Yet here is a German personnel loading an American nuke on a German plane. And this is part of the nuclear sharing arrangement we still have in NATO, where allied countries are given mission to deliver U.S. nuclear weapons in times of war. The picture in the middle is one of the is the 510th Fighter Squadron from Aviano, one of the squadrons at that base, forward deployed to Lask Air Base in Poland, a nuclear-capable fighter squadron moving into Poland. The Russians are seeing this. It's going into their perception of what NATO is doing. NATO is saying, oh, this is not about nuclear weapons. That's how it's being viewed. The bottom picture, a French Mirage aircraft intercepting a Russian backfire bomber from the base I showed you pictures from before over the Baltic Sea. These things happen every day, all the time, and it's happening more because of the crisis in Ukraine and the responses to it. Now, this the rest of the slideshow here, I just want to do a snapshot, if you will, of the world's forces, and just to impress upon you the extent to which countries that have nuclear weapons today, where is their emphasis? It is not on the elimination of nuclear weapons. It is not implementing Article 6 under the NPT. It is on modernizing and extending their nuclear deterrent for the indefinite future. Russian upgrades and modernization of their nuclear forces across the board. ICBMs, sealant ballistic missiles, bombers, tactical nuclear weapon systems being modernized. The United States, across the board again. ICBMs, submarines, ballistic missiles, bombers, what have you, tactical nuclear weapons, infrastructure, nuclear weapons production facilities being upgraded. We're seeing the introduction here in a few years of America's first nuclear-guided bomb. We've never had a guided nuclear bomb in the U.S. arsenal before, but the B-61 has been upgraded down to the right, the bottom right picture, with a guided tail kit so that it can hit its target more accurately. And in 2020, those weapons will be deployed to Europe. France, the same thing. France is modernizing. This year, it is putting a new warhead on in sea-launched ballistic missiles at sea. It has a bomber fleet of Mirage and Rafale fighters that have nuclear cruise missiles that are being upgraded. And also, it is upgrading its infrastructure, warhead, maintenance infrastructure as well. Britain, the same level, at lower level though, they have fewer forces left, but they're about to build a new class of ballistic missile submarines, 3 to 4 of them. The U.S. is building the missile launch compartment for it and also providing the nuclear weapons reentry vehicle that is, you can see the bottom left picture there of a W-76 reentry body that is being maintained. China, a broad modernization as well. This is a country, mind you, with a minimum deterrence strategy. They're introducing new ICBMs, both currently. They have two new systems, apparently, that are being developed, one of them possibly with new with multiple warheads on them. We have a new class of sea-launched ballistic missile submarines that are coming in, with a new missile as well. Cruise missiles that are rumors, they're vague, but nonetheless, there are rumors that they might have nuclear capability, et cetera. They're going on the bombers and on ground launch systems. We have Pakistan, which probably has the fastest growing nuclear arsenal in the world. This is one of their characteristics that China, Pakistan, India, they are increasing their arsenals. The United States, Russia, Britain, and France are reducing their arsenals, but modernizing them. Pakistan, short and medium range ballistic missiles coming in. One thing I want to particularly mention there is a very short range ballistic rocket or ballistic missile, only with a 60 kilometer range. This is a system that Pakistan is specifically talking about using in a tactical nuclear weapons fashion, like short of a strategic attack or response to India's attack. And so we're seeing here sort of the early phases of weapon systems coming in that the military actually thinks about using in scenarios below the big scenario. That means probably in response to an Indian conventional attack. These are two countries that have been at war many times over the last 50 years. So these raise some really serious questions about the potential use of nuclear weapons in that region. They're also building plutonium production facilities and what have you. Air-launched cruise missile, ground-launched cruise missile, very busy program. India, the same thing. Although India is now shifting attention more from Pakistan toward China. And so what you're beginning to see is that they're building more and longer range ballistic missiles that can reach and cover all of China. And so we just saw very recently here, or last month, that picture, the big picture to the left, that is an Agni 5 intermediate range ballistic missile launched from a new kind of launcher, which is a canister. Previously, the Indians have been rolling around their missiles on these open launchers, so to speak. Now they're going to incorporate them into these canisters, which will enable them to become more mobile and flexible and also be able to launch quicker. They're building a ballistic missile submarine, as well as equipping it with ballistic missiles, there are rumors that they're also working on a cruise missile as well. Plutonium production reactors are in design and construction. Israel, a very opaque nuclear arsenal. They don't confirm it, but it's known that they, pretty well known, that they have nuclear weapons. And they've had it since the 1970s. They have at least two legs. One, they're working on a longer range version of their ballistic missile. They might have equipped their submarines with nuclear capabilities. We're not quite sure, but there are certainly rumors about it. They also have bombers, and here even they are also acquiring the Joint Strike Fighter from the United States. This is an aircraft that will also be equipped with nuclear capability in Europe once we deploy it there. So we don't know what its status is going to be in the Israeli nuclear force, air force, but who knows in the future. North Korea, three nuclear tests, a lot of attempts to build something. We see medium range, intermediate range, ICBMs, all sorts of things coming out. And the big unknown, of course, is do they have a nuclear warhead they can put on them? And so they're certainly acting as if they do and talking as if they do, but there is, to my knowledge at least, not any public evidence yet that North Korea has miniaturized its nuclear test devices sufficiently to put it on a ballistic missile. Okay, so it might be that they have, but we just don't know it. We can't see it. But there are plenty of rumors about it, and they're certainly trying. And then, as I mentioned, NATO, not a nuclear weapon state, but an alliance that relies heavily on nuclear weapons. There are five of the countries that have nuclear strike missions with American nuclear weapons. That is the Germans, the Dutch, the Belgians, the Italians, and possibly the Turks. Right now, that new weapon, and it is a new weapon because we don't have a guided nuclear bomb in the U.S. arsenal today. If you hear the spin from the U.S. administration, it's very much, oh no, we've just painted it. We've just, you know, brushed off the dust from, you know, wherever, and it's just coming back as a life-extended warhead. But it's a new weapon because it's being added new capabilities. That will go on the stealthy F-35 joint strike fighter from 2020 in Europe. It will also arm, by the way, the U.S. Strategic bombers here in the United States. So you'll have the same weapon that'll go both on tactical delivery systems and on strategic delivery systems. This thing is right now being developed. They have flight testing going on right now of this prototype. And over the next 3 years, they're going to integrate this weapon on five different aircraft. The F-35 eventually, of course, also the F-15, the F-16, the European Tornado, the B-2 bomber, and it'll go on the next long-range strike bomber as well. So a lot of talk about disarmament, a lot of talk about putting an end to Cold War thinking. But you can't see it if you're looking out there in terms of what's happening with the nuclear forces worldwide. There's no indication that the role of nuclear weapons has been significantly reduced. In fact, I would say that the role of nuclear weapons today, the core mission is exactly what it has always been, to hold at risk adversaries' targets and draw up the plans so that if deterrent fails, the military can destroy those targets in a way that they, you know, they do according to the plan. And the idea is to, by doing that, you scare an adversary into not doing the bad things they plan to do. You know, it's kind of... And so this is sort of a self-fulfilling cycle here that you keep having to make forces credible. You keep having to modernize the forces. Otherwise, if you don't modernize them, the other side will not believe that you can do what you say you want to do, and then they might do something bad, and whatever. I mean, you know, these things, it's a loop. I mean, these arguments, they run and run. And so right now we're seeing the arms control and disarmament side, I would say, losing to the momentum that is in nuclear weapons modernization plans. And I don't mean this in terms of numbers of weapons. We're not talking about Cold War type of huge arsenal builds up and these types of things. I'm talking about an endless, an indefinite, and sustained nuclear technological competition that is going on as we speak between all the nuclear weapon states. That cycle has to be broken. Otherwise, frankly speaking, I can't see how you get out of this if you don't. And so what we need are new initiative that breaks with this pattern, that try to do not only continue the reductions of nuclear forces, but also create changes in the way that the countries that have them envision their potential use. We haven't gone very far down that line. I mean, compared to the Cold War, of course, there are several missions that completely fell away. I mean, we used to have tactical nuclear weapons on frigates and, you know, destroyers and all these types of things. They were sailing around all the world. Those weapons were built to fight other frigates and other destroyers and stuff. I mean, there was like battlefield weapons. Talk about battlefield weapons. You used to have nuclear artillery, you know, that could shoot a few tens of kilometers out there to destroy some tank columns that would go. I mean, you know, these type of battlefield weapons. Most of those weapons have fallen away. That's been the biggest significant impact after the end of the Cold War. But the strategic forces, the long-range forces, the core mission of these weapons remain. And so that's where we have to break the cycle and reduce not just numbers, but also missions and countries that have them. I would say countries that don't have nuclear weapons need to put more pressure on the ones that have them to continue toward changing these postures. These are enormous costs. I mean, why don't we have a proposal, for example, in the current situation from the United States to Russia saying, gee, we know, you know, your financial crisis is biting you. You're in a nuclear weapons modernization phase. Well, why don't we make some kind of a deal here so that we reduce our forces to lower levels that we think we can do with, and that way you can reduce your forces as well. I mean, you have to try and try and try again and again and again and come up with new ideas and plans for these changes. The U.S. military today says that there's about one-third, well, let me rephrase that. In 2018, after the New START Treaty has been implemented, the United States will still have one-third more nuclear weapons deployed than the military today says it needs to fulfill its missions, national security and international obligations. One-third more, okay? But we continue to have them and deploy them, and because the diplomats can't figure out how to, you know, get through and design new arms control reductions. And that's the unfortunate predicament we're in right now. So I don't know what the solution is, but I sure know that the Ukrainian crisis doesn't make it any easier. But what's really needed is countries that do not have nuclear weapons, favor reductions and eventual elimination, must increase their pressure on the nuclear weapon states to do more. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Hans, for that extremely grim picture. Hans contributes to a report that Reaching Critical Will puts out every year that looks at the modernization of all of these countries' arsenals, and every year it's the most depressing thing I work on. But your closing point about pressure from the non-nuclear armed states, that's exactly the approach that ICAN is taking with the Ban Treaty to sort of change the normative legal framework around nuclear weapons as a tool for pressuring disarmament. And change doesn't always come from within, so it's up to us to do a lot of work on the outside.